Mind effects of malnutrition and disease and lack of adequate water and sanitation. The future of an entire generation is in serious peril.
We're joined now by Dr. Nahreen Ahmed. She's a pulmonary and critical care doctor based in Philadelphia, the medical director of the medical humanitarian aid group Med Global. Her first medical mission to Gaza was January. Earlier this month, she returned to Gaza, where she volunteered for 2 weeks. She left on Wednesday and is joining us now from Gaziantep, Turkey. Dr. Ahmed, thanks so much for being with us as you've just come out of Gaza. Talk about what you've seen in terms of child hunger.
Yeah, thank you for having me and for this opportunity to speak about what's going on. This was, as you mentioned, my second trip back, and it was pretty clear how rapidly the malnutrition has risen in Gaza. I had the ability to actually go and see what was happening in the north as well. I'll start with what's happening in the south. Med Global has a stabilization center that's in the south of Gaza that is purely to treat malnutrition. So the situation is so bad that there needs to be specific centers that are primarily treating patients with malnutrition. As was mentioned before in the broadcast, the most vulnerable population here are children under five, but we are also seeing that pregnant and lactating women are suffering from this as well, and there's a rapid increase in malnutrition across mothers as well. You can imagine that these two things are connected, as children under five or newborn babies are receiving nutrition from their parents, from their mother. And with the fact that mothers are also experiencing malnutrition, we're seeing that newborn babies are being born at an astoundingly low weight. Infections are happening very rapidly at these young ages as a consequence. And again, mothers are going through the mental health crisis of experiencing the inability to feed their children because of their own level of malnutrition. The percentages of malnutrition from when I went in January to when I just returned now have doubled. That's in practically a month's time. And as was already mentioned, this situation is happening so rapidly that even if aid was increased tomorrow, we would still be in a severe situation where the amount of food would just not be enough in the immediate term. And so this is what I unfortunately witnessed with my own eyes. Hmm.
And can you talk about what it means when children in incubators, when a little older children experience malnutrition, how they are able to cope if they get some kind of aid, they go out of the hospital being more vulnerable and especially in the, to say the least, extremely harsh conditions now of Gaza?
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, thinking about this, first of all, this is not just a problem that's solved by, you know, the nutrition therapeutic feedings that we're giving. This is a cyclical problem that, first of all, one, it's very painful. A child suffering from hunger, this is an extremely painful thing to experience. Two, the access to food once somebody is released from an inpatient unit is still going to be a problem. We see children chasing after trucks where food distribution is happening. We see children chasing with water bottles to the water distribution trucks. I mean, this is a situation that is also degrading for them to have to experience finding food and water in this way. Lastly, you know, when we talk about vulnerability, we're talking about vulnerability to infections. This is what we're seeing the most in a hospital in the north of Gaza, where almost every single patient that I saw in the inpatient pediatrics unit was suffering from malnutrition. Each of these children had an infectious complication. Either they were suffering from liver disease, from rampant hepatitis A, from lack of access to clean water, or they had severe pneumonias that they were even more vulnerable to complications of because of the level of malnutrition. Or, you know, diarrheal diseases that were happening for the same reasons. And so children are dying from infectious processes as well, the complications of having severe malnutrition. All of these issues are preventable. All of these issues are preventable.
I want to turn to Halash Rafdib, a Palestinian who has nothing to feed her children.
What has this child done to suffer from hunger? I cannot find milk for 5 shekels or a packet of milk from the agency. There, the normal milk is for 150. There's no work. There's no food, no drinks. We are eating plants. We started eating pigeon food, donkey food. We are like animals.
That is a Palestinian mother in Gaza. The UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, UNRWA, is calling the situation in northern Gaza beyond desperate. Maybe that's why the Israeli government wants them to be to lose all their funding. The most comprehensive agency for Palestinians there in Gaza. In a post on X, UNRWA said its staff visited Kamal Adwan Hospital and fuel and medical supplies were delivered, but aid is just a trickle. Food needs to reach the north now to avert famine, UNRWA said. You went to that hospital. Can you describe also the difference between January and now? And what about the doctors and the medical staff? How are they dealing with all of this? I think we just lost Dr. Nahrin Ahmed, so we're going to go to a break and see if we can get her back. Dr. Nahrin Ahmed is a pulmonary and critical care doctor based in Philadelphia, medical director of the medical humanitarian aid group Med Global. She just got out of Gaza and is speaking to us from Gaziantep, Turkey. Back in a minute.
Alabama's got me so upset. Tennessee made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about Mississippi, goddamn. Alabama's got me so upset. Lurleen Wallace has made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about all in the air. I can't stand the pressure much longer. Somebody say a prayer. Alabama has got me so upset, and Memphis has made me lose my rest. Everybody knows about Mississippi, goddamn. Hound dogs on my trail, little school children sitting in jail, black cat crossed my path.
Nina Simone singing Mississippi Goddamn. In a moment, we're going to go to Mississippi, where a so-called goon squad, self-described, of police officers and sheriff deputies have just been sentenced to years in prison for torturing their victims. But we're going to see if we can now resume our contact with the doctor just out of Gaza. But first, we're going to keep looking at the looming famine there. This is Amber Alayan with Medecins Sans Frontières, that's Doctors Without Borders, speaking at the United Nations on Tuesday.
The hospitals rely on quota systems for how many drugs they keep in their pharmacies and their stocks in each department, and they have to choose between whether do I fully stock my operating theater, my ICU, or my emergency room. And this is where you have doctors faced with horrific decisions of having to intubate and amputate children and adults without anesthetics in emergency rooms. Part of the reason for this is the lack of medications or the lack of medications accessible at that time. Part of the reason is that we have internally displaced people living in hospitals, sheltering in hospitals because they have nowhere safe to go. And what that means is they are staying in hospital beds. So what does that mean for injured people? They arrive, they get a quick and dirty surgery in an emergency room or in an operating theater, and they have nowhere to be hospitalized afterward. Or when they are lost all throughout the hospital, and our teams spend all day searching for the patient that they just operated on 12 hours before. What does this mean over the long run? The longer this war goes on, the longer these wounds have to rot, and I mean really rot. The infections are getting worse and worse, and it's horrific. It's horrific for our providers, and it's absolutely horrific for these patients.
Dr. Amber Alayan is with Doctors Without Borders. She went on to describe how the humanitarian crisis in Gaza is impacting women and children.
Two populations are particularly vulnerable: pregnant and lactating women, who were already facing iron deficiency anemia before the war, which puts them at risk for hemorrhage during birth, With the war, it puts them in a state of undernourishment or malnutrition, potentially malnutrition, which means that they can't breastfeed their children properly. The milk doesn't necessarily come in, and it's definitely not enough. And the other population is children under 2 years, which is the breastfeeding age. There's not enough space for us to work closely with the mothers to help them start lactating again. We can't even access them. And to be able to do that, you have to have day-to-day activities with those women, and that is not something that's possible for us right now. Those children need to be breastfed. If they can't be breastfed, they need formula. To have formula, you need clean water. None of these things are possible. What we're talking about is women who are squeezing fruits, dates into handkerchiefs, into tissues, and drip feeding their children with some sort of sugary substance to nourish them.
Dr. Amber Alayan of Médecins Sans Frontières, Doctors Without Borders, speaking at the United Nations on Tuesday. We're rejoined with Dr. Nafrin Ahmed, pulmonary and critical care doctor based in Philadelphia, just out of Gaza on Wednesday. She's speaking to us from Gaziantep, Turkey. If you could go on to talk about, Dr. Ahmed, the mental health situation of the people in Gaza, particularly children.
Yeah, the mental health situation is devastating. Pre-war, 50% of Gazan children were experiencing some PTSD from prior conflicts. It's important for us to remember that this is not the first time that they've experienced this kind of trauma. Given that 50% of children were experiencing that, we're up to probably 100%, presumably, of children who are experiencing trauma based on the day-to-day proximity to missile strikes and experiencing what they're experiencing. Our team that went with me this last week, in a collaboration with an organization called MeWe International, we actually went to several of our medical access points in shelters across Rafah, and we spoke to women and children about what they're experiencing and initiated a community-based approach towards providing mental health support. And this was using things like music, activity, very low cost because it's so hard to get supplies. Or, you know, when it comes to mental health, you know, we're not just talking about medications; we're talking about the ability to give agency and a voice and empowerment back to people. And what we heard was the amount of children just unable to dream. That's what the first thing they tell us, that we have no dreams. We used to have dreams. We have no dreams. We cannot imagine that our lives will ever go back to normal. We've heard children say, I just want to go home. I want to be back in the safety of my home. In an exercise that we did with a group of women and children, and this was mothers and their children, caregivers and their children, the number one thing when asked for people to think, for them to think about a positive, something positive that they could hold on to, they would draw a picture of them returning to their home. This was overwhelmingly the number one thing. And most of these children have been displaced more than one time. And they just talk about how much they miss their home, how much they miss playtime, activities, playing with children, going to school. We met so many children and adolescents who just wanted to be back in school. They're missing that opportunity to have any kind of intellectual stimulation. And it's causing a great deal of depression, anxiety, and just absolute a horrific experience for all involved.
Ahmed, we thank you so much for being with us. Dr. Nafrin Ahmed is a pulmonary and critical care doctor based in Philadelphia with the group Med Global. She's medical director of the Medical Humanitarian Aid Group. Her first medical mission to Gaza was January. She just left Gaza on Wednesday, speaking to us from Gaziantep, Turkey. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. We end today's show in Mississippi, where six former law enforcement officers have been sentenced to between 10 and 40 years in prison each for raiding a home and torturing two black men. The officers, all of whom are white, belong to a group that described itself as the Goon Squad. In January of 2023, the six officers burst into a home, then beat, handcuffed, waterboarded, and tasered Michael Corey, Jenkins, and Eddie Terrell Parker. The officers also sexually abused them with an object while shouting racial slurs. One of the officers put a gun in Jenkins' mouth for a mock execution and pulled the trigger. The bullet lacerated his tongue, broke his jaw, exited through his neck. The officers then planted drugs at the scene in an attempt to cover up their act. The attack occurred in the majority white Rankin County, which is about 20 miles away from majority black Jackson, Mississippi. Some of the officers were also sentenced for their role in a separate assault just 2 weeks earlier, when another member of the goon squad repeatedly tased a man and put his genitals in his mouth. While the charges focused on these two cases, the New York Times and Mississippi Today have revealed that deputies in the Rankin County Sheriff's Department have for decades barged into homes, handcuffed people, tortured them for information or confessions. U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland issued a statement Thursday saying, quote, the depravity of the crimes committed by these defendants cannot be overstated, and they will now spend between 10 and 40 years in prison for their heinous attack on citizens they had sworn to protect, AG Merrick Garland said. We go now to Jackson, Mississippi, where we're joined by Eddie Parker, as well as his attorney, Malik Shabazz, who is with Black Lawyers for Justice. Malik Shabazz, let's begin with you. Can you talk about the courtroom scene and the sentencing of these sheriff's deputies and police officers for what they did?
Good morning to the Democracy Now! Audience and Ms. Goodman. The scene inside of this courtroom in the United States District Court for the sentencing of the goon squad was absolutely incredible, and you wouldn't believe it if it was a movie. I mean, to see the big, bad, intimidating, murderous goon squad, to see all of them there, to see all of them in court, crying tears out of their eyes and begging the judge, begging Eddie and Michael in this packed room was absolutely incredible. But it was well-deserved because so many other families and victims have had to shed those tears and go to jail for a long time behind their crimes and lies. I mean, Amy, it was absolutely incredible, and never have we seen this many police officers sentenced to this kind of time in 1 week, and it was awesome.
Malik Shabazz, talk about how this self-described goon squad operated.
Okay. Well, they operate worse than criminals. I mean, they handcuff people. They like they did to Eddie. When they handcuff, they don't use warrants. They beat. They tase. They take their private parts out of their pants on another victim. They use dildos on Eddie and Michael. At least attempted to use them on Eddie and Michael. They waterboard like U.S. troops did in Iraq. They put guns to heads, guns in mouths. They shoot in mouths. I mean, they are everything that you have ever heard that police may do, they did. They throw down guns. They carry throw-down guns. They plant guns. They steal videotapes. And this is why they have received the longest and strongest sentences for any police brutality case in the history of the United States of America and even the world. This week, the 132 years given to the goon squad defendants represent the longest criminal sentences ever given out collectively and individually to police officers in the history of the United States of America. And they deserve every day and an hour of it.
Eddie Terrell Parker, your feelings in the courtroom after having been so seriously brutalized and tortured to see these officers put away for years.
It was a moment in history. I mean, it was satisfying. I enjoyed every second of seeing and watching it all, you know, come to reality.
I wanted to turn to Michael Jenkins' mother, Mary Jenkins, who earlier in the week spoke outside the federal courthouse in Jackson, Mississippi.
When I first found out that my son was shot and that he was shot in the mouth, I was almost certain that he was dead. I called Rankin County, and at first they wouldn't let me speak with anyone. They said they were in a meeting. And when I finally spoke with someone, I asked him if my son was alive. And he said, as far as I know. I said, well, when can I see him? He said, when we let you see him. This is a crying mother on the phone trying to inquire about her son. He said, Michael is our property. That's what that deputy told me on the phone. My son shot in the mouth, and he's telling me that Michael is their property.
That's Mary Jenkins, Michael Corey Jenkins' mother. Malik Shabazz, will Michael Corey Jenkins and Eddie Terrell Parker also civilly sue for not only personally these men, but clearly one of the things that their lawyers argued, the lawyers for the sheriff's deputies and the officers, is that there was this permissive atmosphere that allowed them to operate in this way. Will they be suing the state or the city?
No, we are suing Rankin County and its board of supervisors and Sheriff Brian Bailey, who was supposed to be running a department that supervised and monitored its officers. Unfortunately, during the sentencing hearings, it came out that Brett McAlpin, who is the chief investigative officer, which is similar to internal affairs, the criminals ran the department in Rankin. And that's why they are facing a very large civil judgment and civil trial in this case. This is a pattern and practice of the Rankin County Police Department to routinely ignore constitutional right violations. I want to say one thing, and then I want you to hear from Mississippi Attorney Trent Walker. He's with me. He's from Rankin. But Eddie Terrell Parker gave the most powerful victim's testimony in these 6 days, I mean, these 3 days of sentencing these six defendants. He was very powerful. Mr. Mel Jenkins, Michael Jenkins' father, were very influential in these hearings. But I would like you to hear a further answer on your question from Mississippi Attorney Trent Walker, who's from Rankin County. Here he is.
Good morning.
Hi, Trent Walker.
Hello.
If you can go ahead. If you can talk about the significance of what's happened, and does this open up hundreds of cases going back decades?
It should open up hundreds of cases going back decades. Anything that these six have touched, in point of fact, given the testimony that they themselves gave, and they used terms like there was a culture of violence. More than one of them said that, and that violence and brutality was expected for you to work on the night shift, which they did not refer to as the night shift. They talked about it as the goon squad shift. And so, yes, anything that they touch should go back, be reexamined, and really just as a matter of course, overturned. Because when you find that they're willing to plant evidence and falsify reports, you know, they had Michael Jenkins charged with aggravated assault on a police officer and with possession of drugs. Michael could have been sentenced to up to 38 years in prison. And as a criminal law practitioner in Rankin County, I can tell you he would not have been slapped on the wrist, and he would have served many years in prison for those charges that they falsified and put on him.
I want to go to U.S. Attorney Darren Lamarck, speaking last year, announcing the federal charges against the former officers for the attack.
These defendants committed heinous acts of violence against handcuffed victims whom they terrorized under color of law. As reflected in the information unsealed today, these men sexually abused their victims, repeatedly tased them, tortured them, all under the authority of the badge, which they disgraced. But not only did they brazenly commit these acts, but after inflicting serious bodily injury by firing a shot through one of the victim's mouths, They left him lying in a pool of blood. Gathered on the porch of the house to discuss how to cover it up. What indifference. What disregard for life.
So I'm wondering if either Trent Walker or Malcolm Shabazz can, Malik Shabazz, can talk about the state charges, also federal charges, what this means. We're talking about officer sentence, not only for the attack that we're describing today on Michael Corey Jenkins and Eddie Terrell Parker, but for 2 weeks before when they barged into someone's home. I think this was Deadman. And how has he been described? The judge said he committed the most shocking, brutal, and cruel acts imaginable. Attorney Shabazz, you've described Deadman as oppressive and sick. Talk about these acts that you know about that they did, that they were sentenced for, in addition to the case of Michael and Eddie.
Well, about a month before, they had targeted a person named Adam Schmidt. And Adam Schmidt allegedly had offended Deadman because he had allegedly stolen something from one of Deadman's friends. So the Goon Squad gangsters, they had his tag, and they had the tag tracers, and they had an order out. They had an order out that if they found him driving anywhere without any probable cause to stop him, that they were going to stop him and deal with him. They found him one night. They called Deadman, who came off duty, on duty, and then Deadman, who was on this night shift. Now, I want to remind you that according to the sentencing hearings, you could not work the night shift in Rankin County Sheriff's Department without being a part of the Goon Squad. And overall, you could not rise or be promoted into the Rankin County Sheriff's Department without participating in violence and being violent at night with the Goon Squad. And every one of the defendants said that they were doing okay in their careers until they were inducted into this gang called the Goon Squad. Okay, so Deadman himself, it's so much sickness here, but any officer who you see that will whip out his private parts and attempt to put it in the mouth of a defendant
on the side of the road,
take his gun out, shoot it by the side of his head to make him believe he's going to be killed, pull his pants down while handcuffed. This came out in court. Pull the man's pants down while handcuffed, grabbed his genitals, told him how the size of his genitals, then dry humped him. I said that it came out in court that Deadman dry humped the man after they took him to a private house in another jurisdiction. I mean, you wouldn't believe it if you saw it in a movie, but I'm imagining it will be that one day. In Mississippi, I got to say this. We have a Department of Justice Civil Rights Division that is headed by a black woman, and Kristen Clark takes her job seriously. And her Southern Division attorneys have pursued and made history in this area. And Judge Thomas Lee, they thought that Judge Thomas Lee down here in Mississippi would not do justice. And oh, how he has set a standard and put police officers on notice all over America that if you do the crime, you're going to do the time, just like anybody else.
Well, I just want to say, Eddie Terrell Parker, you and Michael Corey Jenkins, amazingly brave in coming forward and describing what happened to you, which seems to have broken open all of these investigations right now. I want to thank civil rights attorney Malik Shabazz and Trent Walker with Black Lawyers for Justice, and Eddie Parker, who was tortured by the Goon Squad. Thank you so much, joining us from Jackson, Mississippi. And that does it for our show. Very happy belated birthday to Tammy Warrenoff. I'm Amy Goodman. Our website is democracynow.org. Thanks so much for joining us.
If you're a Canadian Indigenous student considering many life choices about your future, Inspire can help. If you need ideas about possible education or career path options specifically for First Nations, Métis, and Inuit folks like you, join Inspire's mentorship program, Rivers to Success. It's free to register, and you'll get plenty of up-to-the-minute information about university, college, and vocational trade schools. Most importantly, again, it's free. It's free, it's free, it's free. It's online, and we have monthly events with prizes. Discover the many potential job and study opportunities that are waiting for you across Turtle Island. Register online now at rivers2success.ca. Again, that's rivers2success.ca.
Radio Rewind.